Welcome to the Unnoticed ADHD podcast. I'm Cynthia Hammer, the executive director of the Inattentive ADHD Coalition and the author of the book, Living with Inattentive ADHD. Today, I'm interviewing my friend, Dr. Lawrence Choi. He's a Stanford-educated psychiatrist who also has ADHD ASD. Our topic is anger. I learned that I have trouble expressing my anger, and Dr. Choi confesses that he regularly exercises to help him manage his stress and anger. Hope you'll stay to listen. I have some questions for you about anger.
Great.
Dr. Choi, I'm wondering, how do you define anger?
Great question. I think of anger, it's an emotion. And with all emotions, they serve a purpose. And within each emotion, what's the situation that we would perceive anger, and how do we experience anger? Because with anger, usually we experience it when there's a perceived sense of unfairness, when our boundaries might be invaded on. And anger serves us to protect ourselves, to fight. As far as the stress response, the fight, flight, or freeze, the fight emotion.
Ah, okay. How do you separate anger from rage or irritation or annoyance?
So anger is like the category of emotion. So emotions I think of as being very similar to color, right? So anger, if we associate anger with red, so rage would be like dark red, like burgundy. And annoyance, frustration would be a milder side. So that would be like pink.
They're all forms of anger, just the degree that you would call it.
Yes.
Is there some level you think is problematic?
Oh, yes. If we assign an intensity or quantify the anger, so on a scale of 0 to 10. Again, if we think of annoyance as being like on a 1, 2, and being livid, it would be 9 or 10. If we're livid, 9, 10, our PFC, prefrontal cortex, will be turned offline, right? We're going to react in a way that be inconsistent with how we might want to live.
You're saying you lost control of yourself when you're in a livid state?
Yes. Yeah. It becomes unmanageable at that point. Like, have you ever reached that level of anger, or like a 9 or 10?
I don't think I've ever called myself even angry. The most I could say is I'm irritated. I wondered if that is a female thing, or if it's an inattentive ADHD thing, or I just didn't know. I just was reluctant to say I was angry.
Yes. So that's an emotion that some people are uncomfortable acknowledging. What if we swapped out irritated with anger?
See, my image of anger is that uncontrolled emotional state. I'm wondering if I have the wrong definition of anger.
Yeah,
because I've never felt, maybe a few impulsive acts, but generally I don't feel like I've lost control of myself.
Yeah, and that's a common misconception. People perceive anger as being in this uncontrolled, violent state, right? That's like an intensity of 9 or 10. But we can be angry and it's still well controlled.
Okay, but what I was reading about anger is that sometimes it's inappropriate because you're responding to the situation it doesn't warrant that emotion.
Yeah.
It confuses me because they say all emotions are valid.
So that belief or concept that emotions are invalid or inappropriate, that's an older way of thinking about emotions. It's actually very unhealthy because it invalidates or dismisses what we're feeling rather than just recognizing it and honoring our feelings. People used to dismiss emotions, even fear, like that term irrational fear.
So everything we experience is acceptable. or rational.
Yes, rather than judging it, right? It doesn't have to be rational or rational. It's just an emotion.
In your practice, have you seen people with ADD? Does it differ their anger and their experience of anger depending on whether they have the combined type or the inattentive type? Or does it have more to do with their impulsivity?
With ADHD, with the impulsivity and combined hyperactivity, I would say that subset of ADHD are more prone to anger or emotional dysregulation.
Ones that are combined type?
Yes.
Okay.
Managing our emotion do require impulse control. If you have impaired impulse control, you're more likely to fly off the handle.
What are some of the common anger triggers for people with ADHD? Are there some in common?
I think it depends on the individual, what pushes their buttons. I had some people with ADHD who have the oppositional defiant. Any perceived authority to ask them or demands that they do something, like that might trigger anger.
Yeah, as you say that, I relate to that. I prefer to figure things out, not having other people tell me how to do something. That would cause me irritation.
Right. You feel irritated, so let's replace that with anger.
Yeah.
Because the way that you perceived or conceptualized anger is when it's destructive. But at lower levels of intensity, anger is not destructive. I used a metaphor describing anger as fire. Fire, if it's out of control, it'll burn everything, right? That's destructive. That's what rage is. If we're able to control anger, we can use it as a tool for cooking or warmth.
This whole thing is on a spectrum, and at a certain level, it's appropriate and manageable. But then if it gets beyond that level, it becomes destructive and inappropriate.
Anger is empowering.
It's empowering to the person who experiences the anger.
Yes.
But okay, so the example I have is my husband used to get angry. He would leave the house and slam the door. That made him feel powerful.
Mm-hmm.
But how did it make me feel? I think there's always two sides when anger is going on. And I think we have to be aware of how our behavior is impacting the other part of the relationship.
So using that situation, what's a healthy way to navigate the anger?
What I eventually got strong enough to tell my husband is, go and slam the door. But when you come back, we're still going to talk about it.
Yeah. So you're creating a safe environment for anger.
Yes. Yeah. It all ties in with arguments too, I think.
Yeah. It's because it's the fight emotion.
Usually when you're angry, you're having a fight, I think. Or you're going to have a fight. Or you're trying to avoid a fight.
Yes. So what's important is how we modulate our anger. With our emotions, what it does to our mind is that it will influence how we perceive an event. So if we're angry, it's going to influence us to perceive whoever we're angry with as the enemy. Just having that emotion, we will perceive, right?
They're blocking me. They're not letting me do what I want.
Yeah.
They're getting in my way.
Yes, exactly. What we do with anger, or what motivates us, is to resist. Right. We're in resistance mode. We're fighting. We're not there to listen to someone else when we're feeling angry. No. We want to convince them what we're thinking, how we're feeling. So just the act of pausing to observe and name our emotion, if we recognize I'm angry now. It's so important to use the word anger, right? Because some people might, I'm pissed off, right? Or even saying I'm irritated, right? It's less helpful than just saying I'm angry. The moment we name anger, it helps us realize that anger is destructive. It reminds us that this is destructive. If you continue to engage in anger, you're going to do something that's destructive and you're probably going to regret later.
So there has to be a part of your brain that remembers past bad experiences and says, oh, no, don't go there. Take a pause. don't let this fire get out of control?
I would say that part of the brain would be the amygdala. That would be fear. People who avoid anger, their fear takes over rather than being in fight mode, they're in avoidance mode now.
So you're saying they suppress the anger so much?
Technically, therapy speak, it's repression because it's not a conscious choice. Suppression would be like a conscious choice. So it's repressed. People who are conflict avoidant, who have trouble being assertive, they're uncomfortable being angry or they're uncomfortable with other people's anger.
Yes. The way I conceptualize is that often anger comes up spontaneously. It's an unplanned event. It's just like you got set off. What I had read a long time ago, which seems so helpful, is if a couple knew that a conversation was going to be difficult or there was going to be disagreement, they're supposed to sit together on the sofa, close, side by side. How do you think that might be a good solution?
To having a couple sit side by side, like if there's going to be anger?
Or if it's going to be a difficult discussion, that might prevent the anger from rising to the uncomfortable level.
It depends how much trust there is in the relationship. For us to be able to be angry, it does have to occur in a safe setting. Right. To feel safe requires trust. Right. There are some couples where there's low levels of trust. It's going to be very challenging for them to navigate through anger.
Do you see couples where they both have anger problems, or is it more common for one to have anger and the other to be anger hesitant, or whatever the word you use, where they're reluctant to speak up?
Yeah, that's more common. One has anger and the other one is more mild. The couple where both partners have like anger issues, they're not able to show up to an appointment. There's just too much fighting going on that they won't even be able to agree on.
In my example of my husband going out and slamming the door, I had to get stronger to confront him about it.
So strong is being courageous. You have to have the courage to speak up.
You have to trust that you're not going to make the person even more angry by speaking up.
Yes, let me pause and introduce like some newer concepts about emotions, right? The way that we tend to talk about how we feel is, you're making me mad.
I'm making me mad.
Yes, so stop that, because you're making me mad. You're making me upset. We're the ones who are creating the emotions. We think that our emotions spontaneously happen. That's out of our control. Actually, what's happening is we're primed to feel the emotion. Even before we feel angry, we have belief systems about what's fair and what's unfair. We're primed to experience anger if an event happens that we perceive as unfair.
That's like people learning that how they talk to themselves is their reality. Accepting that you have anger, that it didn't come from outside of you. You created the anger. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that is situation primes us to feeling an emotion. We are the ones that will experience it. Yes, the external environment will influence us to feel an emotion. It is our emotion. Why that's a helpful understanding is that if we observe and recognize our emotion, if it's anger, we have the ability to regulate that emotion. So with your husband, this is my anger. And when we get to a high level of anger, the best thing to do is actually disengage. Him leaving, that was the best thing for him to do. That was disengaging.
To cool down.
Yes. And when we re-engage, then it's creating a safe environment. It's to talk about that anger. Uh-huh. We can hold ourselves accountable to how we reacted. Our intention wasn't to scare you. Anger is aggressive. But it's more to acknowledge that I did that and even apologize. I'm sorry for slamming the door.
That sounds like growth in the person, that they have to get beyond thinking their anger is satisfying. You said earlier, it makes you feel powerful.
Yes.
And so how do you get to the point where you start recognizing, no, this is not good. This is not helping our relationship. And then you get to the point of saying, it's not the partner who's making you angry.
No, it's not. Yes, we're the ones feeling angry. A healthy way to manage anger is to release it in a constructive way. The most effective way to releasing anger is moving our body, is exercise. Yeah, so for me, I exercise 6-7 days a week. Because if I don't, my level of patience and irritability will climb.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that. How do people go on that process of learning to express their anger in healthy ways to keep the fire manageable and not let it become a conflagration?
Yes. One, it requires us to recognize. So this is both called permission to feel. And the mnemonic is RULER, R-U-L-E-R. First one is R is for recognize. We have to be able to have the ability to recognize what we're feeling, what the emotion is. As most people, when they're feeling angry, they're not looking inward, right? We're looking outward. We're looking at whoever is pissing us off. So then we're going to be disrupted. If we pause to recognize, okay, this is anger, the next step is to understand what that emotion is and the implication. Understand that anger is destructive. It could be destructive. Right.
Well, maybe we should be talking about anger at the higher levels, because when we just call it anger, we already said that it's not always a bad thing.
Yes. And so being nuanced with it, so being able to name it, how intense is this? Am I on the annoyance level, frustration?
Can I express myself without blowing over the other person?
Yes, exactly. Right. Annoyance in a marriage, right? That's par for the course, right? It's going to happen. Yet if we get to rage, that's going to destroy our relationship. We want to avoid blowing our tops. Yeah. So it does require us to also label the emotion. I'm a huge fan of labeling, for a beginner, just calling it anger. If it's irritation, still call it anger.
Okay.
Let's give that a try. It seems like in the past, you were more comfortable calling it irritation than anger.
Go ahead. We are on the RULER. Tell me the rest of the RULER.
E is for expression, how we express it.
Wait a minute. I didn't get L. What was L?
L is labeling, just naming it.
Okay.
Labeling it is of paramount importance. And the reason is just by labeling, by naming, it activates our PFC. We can re-engage the frontal region of our brain to help us regulate that emotion. When therapists pause and ask, what are you feeling? It's not to annoy your person. It is to help them observe that emotion.
Well, and I think that's what you earlier said. Meditation helps people become more aware of their body and their feeling state. Because I know a few times when I was really irritated, I wasn't aware of it until I spoke.
I'm going to get you to
I was teasing you. I was teasing you.
All right, I missed that.
Okay, so E.
E is for expression, how we express the emotion.
What's appropriate expression of your anger? Just say, I'm angry. You can't say you're making me angry.
Oh, so communicating it.
Okay. Some people say, I need to take a break. I need to take a break. I'm getting too upset. I'm getting too angry.
Yes.
Something like that.
Yes. We can respect and honor that emotion because we know that anger, if it's fire, we don't want to play with fire. You'll get burned. Okay, yeah. Let's let that cool off, right?
But the thing I think is important there is sometimes my husband would say, I don't want to discuss it. And that cuts it off. If you say, I need a break, at the same time, you need to say when you're going to get back to finish the discussion. Because the person has power if they say, I need a break, and that's the end of it.
Yes. So it's important that we re-engage afterwards and address the anger.
R is to re-engage?
Or R is to regulate. Yeah. So re-engaging is part of regulating it. What's important is less about what we do when we're angry, how we respond once the anger subsides. to help us best navigate that does require us to have our PFC, prefrontal cortex, at its optimal functioning. If a couple argues, fights in the evening, when our PFC is drained, we're more likely to get angry. We're tired, we're hungry, right? We're likely to feel angry. Rather than trying to talk about it after the fight at night, it's recognizing, okay, just disengage and get a good night's rest, sleep, and in the morning, talk about it.
Yeah, with my husband, and I want to talk about something at night, and he'll say, I'm too tired, let's talk about it in the morning.
We actually want to respect that.
Yeah.
So the thing about anger is, if we name it and we recognize how our body's feeling, because when we're angry, our body gets really tense and our heart rate's up, blood pressure's up. If we're able to sit with it and let it go, let that tension go, let that resistance in our mind go.
Yeah. Well, when you say sit with it, I'm thinking, no, you really don't want to sit with it. You want to get up and move around.
After moving around, after we dissipate, release that energy, then we can sit with it and observing our ability to letting it go.
In a couple, if one person has anger problems, is there a role for the partner in helping, or is someone on their own journey to solve their own anger issues?
Oh, it's our own relationship with our emotion. And the partners, the people that we're with, allows us to form a healthy system in how we navigate those emotions.
They have a role to play.
Yes. So just like me, you see how I'm trying to summon your anger?
You're trying to make me angry?
I'm not trying to make you. I'm more supporting you to allow your anger to come up to the surface, right? So for us to observe it, right?
Oh, I don't know what you could say that would make me angry.
There's things that I can bring up, but best to avoid talking about those subjects.
Okay. So if you have a patient that has anger issues, how do you help them? Do you teach them the ruler? How do you get them to do the first thing?
Yeah, for them to just be able to label anger and understand that what they're feeling is anger.
I never heard about this, but I read about state anger and trait anger. State anger is an impulsive response to a situation, and trait anger is your personality tends towards anger. Do you relate to that at all?
Yeah. Some people have a temperamental disposition towards anger. Like testosterone, right? Like people with higher levels of testosterone are more likely to.
There's certain things about their chemistry that makes them more liable to anger more easily.
Yeah.
I read sometimes people take SSRIs. At what point would you be thinking about medication with someone who has anger issues?
If the anger issues start to lead into bipolar disorder, manic, or if the anger is so impulsive that it's destroying relationships or impairing their ability to hold down a job, mood stabilizers are the ones that help with that aggressiveness.
So most people, once they learn about anger and want to improve their anger, they can do it on a journey by themselves.
I want to avoid saying by themselves because it requires practicing that in relationships, having people that they can trust. Trust is so important. Our development or our early childhood, adolescent experiences, they influence us and condition us on how safe we perceive anger is. Some people who might have had severe trauma in their past or in relationships or raised by parents who might have been physically, emotionally abusive, they could be very afraid to be angry.
That tied into that book, The Body.
It's the score.
The score. That's your memory in there.
They're uncomfortable with anger, they end up in a constant flight or freeze state. Right. That deprives them of is an ability to have a sense of empowerment anger is the empowering emotion. If you're stuck more in fear, then that will lead to anxiety, right? Low self-esteem.
Are you saying that everyone should have this range of emotions, including anger, but have them all, like Socrates says, in moderation? It's healthy to have the whole range of emotions available to you?
Absolutely. I will even counter that it doesn't have to be in moderation. Some people will have high levels of anger if they find a constructive way or an outlet, like physical sports, right?
Yeah.
MMA
really slam the ball against the wall.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Or being the octagon, mixed martial arts, fighting, right? That's allowable. It's acceptable, right? Uh-huh. Yeah. It's how we regulate, how we channel that. Emotions gives us color in our life. Right? Emotions literally is to put us into motion. Each emotion will affect how we perceive the events in our lives. If we're unable to feel anger, we might not be able to perceive what's invading our boundaries, how we can set limits and be assertive, and how to say no.
Yes. Is there a certain part of the brain that gets activated when someone's angry, and when you talk that the ones take medicine, that calms it down?
Or the amygdala is what turns on, right? It's what detects threat, and again, how we appraise the event. Some appraise it as fear, right? That threat will lead to fear, whereas some people perceive maybe that threat, an obstacle, is more of a challenge to overpower and overcome.
Yeah.
Whether we go into fight or flight mode.
Is there anything else you wanted to tell us about anger?
Yeah, that learn to accept it. If we commit to mindfulness meditation, it allows us to just observe that emotion and feel safe with feeling that emotion. Over time, the more comfortable we get with anger, and we recognize that it's a natural emotion, and it's not an emotion that really belongs to anyone. It's not, oh, he's an angry person, she's an angry, I'm angry. It's more that it's an emotion that will arise in relationships. When someone else is feeling angry, rather than being afraid of that person, it's more recognizing, okay, that's anger. Whether it's mine or yours, that's anger. What can we do to navigate this emotion, this potentially destructive emotion? So I'm comfortable with anger. When I run the couple session and I see anger surfacing, I pause and I point it out. Just doing that really does change the process and outcome. There's this phenomenon in physics called the observer's effect. Just by observing a process does change the properties, the direction of that process. For example, if we wanted to check the temperature of the turkey that we're baking in the oven, just by opening the oven door and sticking the thermometer in, will change the temperature. Just by labeling the emotion changes the whole interaction, changes the whole experience, that emotion. So if we're
able to talk like you're the outside person labeling that, I was thinking that the person who has anger could do that for themselves if they spent time being reflective afterwards, saying, what was that all about? And they could say, wow, I was angry.
Yes. So it is an experience and a journey that we can go on our own.
All right, Dr. Choi, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Very enlightening.
Yeah, thanks for asking me about anger. It's definitely an emotion that I love talking about.
I've started to think that people that are specially interested in something, it's because they themselves have an issue with it.
Yeah, I definitely had issues with anger.
This is my cultural perception, but I don't think of Chinese people ever being angry.
That's probably why a lot of Chinese people are ones who get picked on, right? For me, I fought back. I was very comfortable with anger, and I guess sometimes even too comfortable.
Oh, I mean that you were a fighter?
I grew up in San Francisco. I had to defend myself. I had to learn to fight.
But it sounded like it had a purpose because you taught people not to mess with you.
Yeah, yes.
So sometimes it's appropriate.
Yes. If I didn't, I would have been bullied my whole life. Allows me to create my narrative by being comfortable anger, I was able to create the narrative for myself that I'm a fighter. I'm not going to let others take advantage of me or pick on me.
What I'm hearing is that anger can be appropriate, and maybe your fighter thing is not what you want to bring to your marriage. It was appropriate for learning to defend yourself, but then it's not appropriate everywhere.
Yes, exactly. Just like fire, right?
It's good if it...
It's useful in some situations, but others, no.
Even a big fire is useful in some situations.
It's the context, right?
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
This has been a production of Inattentive ADHD Coalition. Check us out at iadhd.org and see how you help us by donating or by spreading awareness of inattentive ADHD. Thank you.